what I'd like to try to do today is give you a little bit like how you might benefit from what we have for offer. We are working hard to open up our internal processes as much as possible, to make as much of what we have in-house in capabilities, tools, interfaces available to the community. And we're not there yet, but we're working on it. And I would like to give you a little hint on what we're doing. Before we get there, it's always easier to explain what you're trying to solve if you have some idea of what is at least considered to be the problem. So I'm going to talk a little bit about where I see the challenges of the IT industry today. And to start out with, to give you some motivation to dive into that whole subject with me, I'm going to talk about how we feel we can make money out of it, which is always a nice piece of motivation to either save it or make it. Without further ado, one of the topics is money. Solution for those sort of problems, because I don't think that the open source community is a challenge, it's rather what's in place today. It's not really always a solution, it's more of a challenge than the users. And then we can make sure. When we started thinking about enterprise Linux back in 2000, right, we had IBM asking us to build a Super Linux version for all their mainframe products. And we were sitting there with $80 convenience offering that would have been easily sellable without any license subscription from Hawaii. So the total market of $80 is not really what we were after, even 380 people out there that were nervous, much less as a corporation like we are now or other than that space. So we have to think about what we want to sell, what we want to offer to people. And you normally don't get any clear answers for that. If you ask people, well, why clear answers? If you look at the results of the development process, those scores, that's what you get two things of if you buy a product based on that. It's a license to use your code. And it's somewhere, at least the expectation is somewhere's going to fix it to break. And if you split these two components clearly from this one development result, you get an understanding that you have open source and something else. What am I talking about? Without a fixed roadmap, without a predictable timeline and a commitment behind by a vendor to make Linux usable over, for example, 5 or 10 years, where's the market sitting on top of that platform? If you're a solutions provider, you can only sell and hope to sell that solution while the platform exists. And let's take my next slide. Linux is a moving target. As much as Linux is a moving target, we love Debian. I love Debian. It's a great system. I couldn't say anything bad about BSD, but there's no frozen status where you can go back to Oracle and say, look, if you deploy your solution on that, if you certify your solution against that, we're going to make it run for the next 7 years. That specific version of the platform, not what's going to come out tomorrow, or it's going to run. And that's not necessary for a technology system that everything works with the product. It's not necessary for most things. It works for industry players or customers who don't really want to default to the technology in the first place. That's exactly the reason we're naming them. And you can say that this is one the FIA on the feed, these add-ons, allow them to decide the distance, bridging the gap from the open source ongoing to the mainstream blockchain. So that's why they have the project object. To explain that a little bit deeper, we invented something, or I invented something that I call ICE. Nothing like an acronym or anything, just my dad's first name. Didn't come up with anything better, and I never intended to publicly announce it and describe it. And what we did was to simply go one step before, beyond that, what I just mentioned so far. We split development into development and maintenance. Now, calling development what we consider development on the software, but we share it. And maintenance, even though maintenance follows the code base. And support service are pretty much the same like in the code support. So you just need the distinction here on the slide and you'll understand. For example, legal relationships between entities when it comes to backup support service agreements and so on. I'm not going to go into that depth, but what this a building block model of a generic IP contract, if you want, gives me is a chance to clearly define what's in our product line. And the important thing here is not the product line, the real model behind it. You have just a perfect professional on the left hand side, be a convenience offer. There's no commitment in there, it's just the effort that we put in that we want to recover from. And then you have the other model where we have availability and maintenance. That basically comes with the first box that we sell, because if we have sold some trust server or Planet Trust server for the first time, that one customer alone forces us, like for example, to maintain that code base for the next 7 years. We don't have any means of coming back out of that, and that's not even a control point to sell it. But really the control point for what it is, which is not really lock in or anything, just means or motivating people to help us think about living. And the availability of support, you can call it certification, and it's compliant with the standard code base that you maintain on the time the hardware and software. So the commitment to keep the availability of support up is really the only control point that we're we'll selling on the time. These still involve have to think about it as a development, not from now, but any interest in the project. It has very clearly structured IT contracts on open source software based. And that's an important subject because actually nobody gives any thought. Just keep things open either for free or you have to pay for it or whatnot. And you clearly can line up what components you need to cover your contract and how you structure them. Before I became CEO, I was running the largest businesses, so I saw all relationships. Big partners. And if you imagine having a legal team in Russia and all these guys, to go up against them alone with the help of a friend who has all the other legal companies and shows was an easy task. And we need some structure, and that's the structure behind it. It helped us big time in terms of what comes from it is, as we charge for maintenance only, we're only charging for part of the line. We might not charge for all of it. When you hear somebody from a source vendor saying, hey, your resource is more expensive than us, I'd like to have that explained in that picture. Right? If you only charge for part of it, part would be more expensive than having the same part included in the bigger picture. That's really expensive. APIs is really what I'm here to talk about. And not in the sense that you might be used to these kinds of calls. I'm not looking at the processing part in data processing. What I think is far more important than the is how the data is structured and how you can access the data, because you know how the data is structured. To start with the APIs, Microsoft talks a lot about open standards and open APIs. What you basically get is a blob, a gray box, and a lot of APIs attached to that. And they may or may not be all that Microsoft itself uses for any other open source or any other closed source vendor. There's any amount of keys possible, you never know, and you never have a chance to find out what closed source as it says. Now, in open source, we don't talk about defining APIs very much because we don't have the luxury of sitting in consortium where a lot of people get paid for sitting in, which is a good thing. But I think that's the way to do that. And that is make source code the APIs. Everybody can look at it. We have a clear definition that's absolutely exactly to the point. And everybody who understands it and you don't just go into metal can use an API to the fullest extent possible. When you look at what happens then, that we have other players that develop all the pieces and then using these APIs. And I'm going to have some later on where I think I can sustain other things. Before that thing, very gravel picture from the back of that. One thing that really, really gets overlooked far too many times is the last bullet here, and that's the effect extension of the GPL. Right, for example, looks at the CPL Sun as a very interesting first block that you wrote that he thinks that they improve over the GPL by leaving that detail for one part. If you listen closely, it's going to matter what I just say. You will have understood that it's exactly the infectious nature that enforces all these competing parties, not by their free decision, but by legal requirement to share the results of their work. Without that infectious nature, IBM could withhold part of the drivers and politics, or HP could do that to try to be better than IBM, or Sun, or us, or whomever I'm there. Without that enforcement of everybody involved having to share their results, you get more level playing field. You have nice cooperation between parties who are normally rather effective in the growth. Another building of the evolution of IT platforms. said, specification for computers is test. So what I'm doing here is I try to understand where we are, where we're going. So I need to look at where it comes from. Well, in the early 1960s, IBM signed an S360 platform. And although it was expensive, at the time every machine was expensive, so they didn't stick out that much. So they had the first standard environment, so to say. Intel has the pleasure to make to be the leading platform. And then was the first common base that software could be based on, where you could run things from one system on another, EDP individual with other examples like one label. I'm not trying to push the details here, I'm just trying to say that this evolution of platforms in IT moved up the solutions that came from the hardware and from the operating system. Microsoft facing it up, another example I could pull up the slide. It ended up in Java and then now. Over time, this progression moved up the stack. And the important part is, only at the very last step does the user enter the picture. Isn't that fascinating? We're talking about IT solutions, and the guys whose problems who want to solve these solutions only come into the picture after everybody else has had their share and made their money. Another representation of the same fact, we have the stack card, hardware, what I'm getting at is this XML layer. The further up that stack you get, the easier it gets to integrate applications on a more abstract, means more powerful level than further down. 4 years ago, I had a hard time to integrate the solutions that made a lot of money, integrating the solutions that they would say nothing bad about that. The cake gets smaller, the further up the stack you get. It's important for Microsoft because they have a much better stack. Now, would they then do so? Rest of that stack, selling software basically as access license, clients very own intellectual property? I don't think so. And you could ask, hey, they just released their office formats that contradicts what you said. Not entirely, because if you know what's in there today, you remember my slides about Linux? You never know what's in there tomorrow. So the slightest deviation from that API standard that they release, but the slightest deviation from the file form definition they release, it's going to break that standard. It's not going to be accessible anymore. You can't trust it as one of the photos. Now, as I just said, this stack is what you normally see when people sketch things about solution stack, right? Hardware, operating system, the web application. What never enters that picture, funny enough, is the guys we're really looking at. And why is that? Well, simply put, because operating systems are built to support hardware. And middleware layers use whatever kind of features and functions the operating system provides. Well, that's right up there. And then applications make use of what's left. And the user gets what is left in the end. If we now were to step back for a second and look at that picture from the outside, and we look at abstraction, not from the perspective of the hardware vendor, software vendor, whatever, but from user, and look exactly at the interface, not between the XML and Java side of things, but at the interface between the user and its very own data. Well, what you get? Basically a mock-up for all the monopolies in the IT industry. Okay, but as I just said, we can attack Microsoft. We can get it done by simply doing what they never did before. Be absolutely open, be absolutely transparent when it comes to data structures. Easy for open source. Data structure stack. Challenge today is every developer, and that's true for open source today as well, it's just that we don't have the conceptual restriction of every developer today chooses his own variable names, his own programming language, his own data structures, capabilities, object oriented form, C++, C, C sharp, whatever it is, D, X. And the thing that most people think the least about is how they structure their data and what is thought about even less, how you really align the choice that you make with standards that are available. That's a bad thing. Now, if we were to go ahead and from any project possible, this is not a corporate thing, any project out there could claim their data structures as the ones they offer to partners and properly document. and all of a sudden you would have a chance to apply semantics in that data from a user side of things, not just from home documentation or computer system. And you would get rid, or have a chance to get rid, of all these levels of abstraction that the OG models define, right? Another abstraction from another beta model, beta model, and so on, and one type of form. All that stuff, the UDDI and WSDL. I read all these acronyms and they don't resonate with me. Let's get back to where we have solutions from these things, from the same. I think open source can be able to do that. Last bullet is really the inhibitor that I see. The closed source industry does not have any intentions whatsoever. But it stops today because it stops them from doing what the major business model is today. Control customer data by owning the process.
Thank you.
That was another problem, which maybe I should make that point or whatever. I'm not sure. How can you benefit from all people? How can you integrate the large processes? How can you interact with that? Well, that's one thing for cognitive dynamics out there. I can talk about it a lot. I'm not sure that I can talk about Copenhagen that much or not in Copenhagen enough about it because it's not my second time here. It's been 5 years since last time. Okay. Like to drag you through that. If you go back to the quote unquote thing of building a Linux distribution and you want to do it for a variety of customers from a variety of countries, running on a variety of hardware architectures, having, for example, legal concerns or wanting selection or bigger selection or smaller selection of packages or what different products kind of variances and you have a whole load of dependencies on pretty much everything you touch. We currently maintain something like 4,500 software. We do that in a bunch of environment that enables us to cope with the roughly 150, 200 ISOs of only putting them on a server that we keep in that way. So we can't do that anymore. And it started in 1996 that we needed to face that challenge in a more efficient way than we had to do it before then. What we did is instead of, we can't handle an effort that basically exponentially grows. With every other dimension that we add, new language, new hardware architecture, new product, it will explode, get out of hand, and actually be 4,500 packs of software. More company, something like 50 people at the time, of course. The idea came when we leaned back a bit and just got lazy. It was Richard Steindl, one of the co-founders, but he was just sick and tired of doing 5,700 packs of software every day. And he started running scripts. And what we have now is really something where we can align a lot of people to use these scripts or their accessories in doing all these tasks. And the foundation for that, funny enough, and we didn't realize that until very recently, not geniuses would mention something like 96 that I'm proud about today. But it grew into that and we were lucky that it be in some time. We built an infrastructure that is mostly based on common data structures. Call it RPM packages or sort of like package database entries, whatever you want to call it. It's one data structure that we base all that work on. And there's a team led by a guy here in Denmark who's a big group for that. Responsible, not just responsible for everyone's package that we deal with. And they own that data form. They set the rules, what's going on with that data, and how to read it, and what the reference for it is. And then we have another team interacting with that team, doing another thing like R, right? So there's a 390 team, there's not any team, EC64, whatever. And by starting up the data, we have a simple focal point that we come back to from all these dimensions. And that enables us to really work together in a way that adds effort with every new dimension that we add to the system, but without having us face an exponential growth. So it became manageable. We can add new versions of hardware and cost us something like $2 million a year, effortless. We can add new languages, and it pretty much doesn't cost us anything because the community helps us do that because we have so little space. We can add new legal checks, and thus the legal team at an organization is very happy about the structure of the system because we know what we did. And we can reproduce our binaries, we can document every single last bit that we shipped over the last 5 years. I think that's rather unique for a software company. What you basically have in there is tools that are in every single city. The documents for it are included as well. They're open source, nothing magic about it. But you can use them for your own processes. And these built environments change for it and have dependencies automatically so that you can do testing, which is another one of the dimensions that I haven't mentioned, automatically as well. So, for example, you can have 90 builds on the latest releases of Linux without any effort attached to it. You can automatically test. unnecessary conduct for us to use on so. Bottom line, where are we getting it? I wanted to close this little presentation with a little artwork and put it in context a little bit. This is a strategy slide that I have to do when I'm an CEO. Dealing with board members and dealing with the executive team around me, who said that time, I don't know. We need a slide that starts on the left hand side of the page and ends up on the right hand upper side of the page, and it's going to go up. So the two dimensions that we went for was time on the horizontal axis, pretty obvious. The value add that we can provide on the vertical one. The differentiation we can move it into. No advantage. Over time, our focus really shifted and keeps shifting from building something to managing something to integrating something. You could say the focus shifts from developer to systems administrator to people just wanting to use the system, make a solution of the challenge. On the vertical axis, we started out by consolidating technology using the tools that I just described. But then we have to go beyond that and either make sure that we can repeat that and continuously run that process to build the technology into a platform and make it a predictable, dependable environment for people who didn't want to really be bothered with the platform stuff. Then we're going a step beyond now in automating that platform. In other words, if you want to install a virtualized step-based image of a system-based solution stack in a virtual environment, you don't have to care for hardware setup or anything, you just pick a button and up comes another stack. So that's a huge chunk ahead in terms of usability of the system. Now, in systems management, where we are, is that we have spent the time since 1996 on only building our own infrastructure. I think what we want because it's not because I trust the company that we because we built our own non-stack based homegrown fully system distribution. To get done with this, we had to start a project to copy them to the different copy and another set of tools, which is what we released on the GPL last year and finally after a couple of months of programs that we just need to so we have technology now available as an open source project. And the interesting thing about this open source project is not that I'm here thinking I'm a nice guy or anything and try to basically use it. We're eating out of the dog food. What I've been talking about is data standards. One of the data standards is CIMS defined by BMPF, which is part of OASIS. That's an open standard. We work together with IBM, Intel, HP, many others, push that standard, and we implement it into GAP. So what you basically have is a provider environment, a modular environment, where you have an open standard that makes everything the machine can do accessible from the outside, along with fully exposing tenants that are standard compliant. So what that basically gives you is the choice whether you want to run the CA unit at HP OpenView, IBM QD, without centers, or any other management console out there to manage the system stack. And what it also does is provide exactly the same code base under GPL to our partners and customers. So if you want to build your own ISV solution using the same environment, enabling the solution as well to manage as one entity together with the system platform, you may do so. So you have taken care of the pain of how to manage your custom stack. Not only from a building perspective, but also from a management perspective. Next step would be to have another layer where we could just say, hey, give me a talent, give me the database for the following feature set. We're working on that as well because it's easy to build that other layer on top of such a solution, such a capability, like I said. That's the next step. Now, when I talk about integration, mostly data integration I'm focusing on, and that is for the future, that's the next step. After we have a system that can be brought up without any issues, and that can be managed without any major hassles, I can focus on what's really important. I can focus on the interface for bundles. I can do funny stuff that might not be obvious to think about just like that, but I think it makes a little bit of sense after what I will talk about today. And I'd like to close with a remark. You find Project Looking Glass from Sun, demo at the end, and you find it on the internet. It's a great project. But it's always a challenge start to build three-dimensional user interfaces that are bound by such a paradigm in enterprise search, Spark or Microsoft or Apple, whatever you want to attribute that with. Right? You can build wild things like, some of you might have seen Minority Report. I think that's possible. I think it's possible today. And I think it requires an infrastructure just like the one that I've been talking about today. Thanks for listening.
You talk about open standards. What will it take for a standard to be open? Does it need to say be open to the standard process, or just let's say Microsoft just provides a full implementation of that word format?
I'm not going to be able to answer the question to the extent where I have the definition, but I have one idea that might be good enough. And that is, if you look at what happens in the open source environment, meaning you have not only the standards fully installed, the data structures fully installed, but also the reference implementation for them, where you don't have to bind yourself to a piece of paper that no one's really interested in, but can go right back to something where you can test live what you're talking about, then it works. So what I'm saying, in other words, is we have shown, we as the open source community, I'm not talking about me and nothing, I'm talking more you guys, have shown that we can build the first ever generically usable open source brackets operating system environment that can run everything in any language with all the features that it has. Has nobody ever achieved something like that? Why should we be proud of that and propose that and suggest that kind of proceedings for standardizing things like that? As all the other formal standards ever haven't achieved that. So I think we could have the, you could say arrogance, you could have self-esteem to really work along the lines that have shown successful for us. Any other questions?
Actually, I was just hoping you could display the URL for Xen Linux.
It's in Kurt home that I think Kurt Gallup's the guy who runs the system. This formal slide that's going to be able to put out on the phone and show you if you missed anything. There you go. Sorry. Loose.de. Fairly bad law. Fairly Linux. Sorry. /Linux/. And these are the archives on the two, so that you found. Anything else? Well, I'm going to be hanging out in the